Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at mathworks.com.
This is Radio Boston. I'm Sasha Pfeiffer, in for Meghna Chakrabarty. After months of polls, nasty ads, and sniping in the media, all four candidates for governor finally sat side by side last night for their first debate. The topic was environmental and energy policy, but center stage in the debate was Cape Wind, the controversial wind power project in Nantucket Sound. Governor Deval Patrick alone defended Cape Wind, and his three challengers criticized him for his handling of the project. Here's independent candidate Tim Cahill taking the governor to task for allowing the utility National Grid to impose steady annual rate increases on its customers as part of its deal with Cape Wind.
It's guaranteed. 3.5% per year is guaranteed. How many other businesses, private business, would love a guaranteed increase in prices every year?
And how many people in this room think that the Middle East is going to be calm and stable over the course of the next decade? I don't think many people do. And that's
we're getting less and less of our energy from the Middle East.
We are getting a big chunk of our natural gas and fossil fuel resources from very volatile parts of the world. And we have to deal with that.
And the governor is still having to deal with harsh criticism over Cape Wind from his rivals, even though the project has cleared most of its regulatory hurdles. Joining me to talk about yesterday's debate and what it may forecast for the race ahead is Bruce Moll. He's the editor of Commonwealth Magazine, and he and I asked the questions at the debate last night. Listeners, did you listen to the debate? Has it changed your perspective on any of the candidates? And did any of their views surprise you? Or has it changed how you plan to vote in November? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Bruce Moll, editor of Commonwealth Magazine, thanks for coming into the studio.
Glad to be here.
So Mass Inc., which publishes Commonwealth Magazine, the magazine you edit, sponsored last night's debate. I wonder if you could start by telling us briefly, why have a debate focused heavily on Cape Wind when essentially the Cape Wind regulatory process is nearly over?
It's true. It is nearing the end. I think the final decision on this contract should come sometime next month. But the goal was, I guess we felt that the whole issue about where Cape Wind should be located in Nantucket Sound had been exhaustively covered. But the contract and the money and how it's financed has not been covered very much. And even though that's making it through a regulatory process, it's pretty dry with tomes and tomes of filings. And it, as the last night's debate showed, it's a pretty lively topic, and it opens an avenue to look at a lot of energy issues, solar power, natural gas, Middle East politics. All these things sort of play into why are we putting a wind farm in Nantucket Sound?
And you're right that so much of the debate last night was about the finances of this project, not the aesthetics, which has been the debate for so long. I wonder if any of their positions surprised you. We had Cahill and Charlie Baker basically saying this thing makes no financial sense. It's a giveaway, huge subsidies. Did that surprise you, or did anything else surprise you about the candidates' positions?
Yeah, that surprised me that they were so identical, I guess you'd say. And I think that's going to be a problem especially for Charlie Baker, is he's got to distinguish himself from Cahill. And that last night, they were almost like a tag team. Jill Stein was a surprise. I thought she'd embrace this project pretty much. But she came for process reasons and political reasons. She said she was opposed to it.
You're right. That was very interesting. You know, Jill Stein talked about how philosophically she likes the idea, but she just felt that she sort of had objections to how the project has been handled so far.
As Cape Wind comes to us today, it's clearly not delivering the most green energy for every dollar invested. And it's asking for an enormous investment, probably $2.5 billion, that will mostly come from ratepayers.
Again, this is the Green Rainbow Party candidate that I think people thought would be a shoo-in for this
Absolutely.
Project.
You got green in your title. You got to be for this, you would think.
Exactly. So do you feel that based on what voters may have heard last night, that debate had the potential to reshape people's feelings about the fall campaign?
Well, that's a pretty big statement. I don't think it'll reshape their feelings about the campaign, but I think it was... What I liked about it, it was sort of narrowly focused. You know, so many debates are one question on some subject and one question on a totally different subject, and you never really get a feel for anything. And then this one, I felt like the candidates were giving their sort of worldview in a narrow range, you know, the environmental energy area. And it showed their economic philosophy a little bit. So I think it told us a little bit about them. There's going to be a lot more debates, I think, after Labor Day. But this was a good start. I think it was a good kickoff.
Do you think anyone gained political traction last night based on their views?
I thought Patrick was a little muted in how he defended the project. He sort of tried to look at all sides of it and played both sides a little bit. But he probably maybe benefited a little bit because he was the only one. They were all ganging up on him, and maybe you felt like at least he's standing up for that one point of view. I thought Baker was pretty articulate about giving his position. I thought Cahill was articulate about giving it. I thought they were all showed very common sense approaches to the problem. I don't think anyone, you know, had a slam dunk last night.
You referenced, as you put it, Deval Patrick being ganged up on. One of the issues that Charlie Baker brought up was what he called sort of this no-bid contract for Cape Wind. And he said he sort of drew a pointed contrast between that and Patrick's recent opposition to slot parlors at racetracks based on what he basically said would have been no-bid deals.
How can you defend Cape Wind, the biggest no-bid contract in the history of the Commonwealth, while you're opposing other issues because they're no-bid contracts?
Do you think that was a fair point to raise?
Yes, I do. And it's not really Patrick's fault. It was in legislation that this approach, a negotiated contract, could be done. But it is an interesting parallel, given the gambling debate. So this is a contract that a utility and Cape Wind negotiated. And the utility gets a fee, a 4% of the contract. They get a 4% fee for just doing the deal. Which, think about that, that's pretty amazing. They get 4%, that's what all of us ratepayers pay, for just doing this deal. So it's a negotiated contract. Who's looking out for our interests in that contract? Now, the Attorney General has reviewed it and said, I want to lop 10% off. And everyone agreed to that, so there was a settlement. But she did that without getting to the bottom of what's the profit margin of Cape Wind on this? What's its actual construction cost? There's a lot of details that the parties only know. We in the public don't know.
It actually might be worth right here. Could you tell us what is left for this project to actually become a reality?
Well, as I understand it, they need a contract and it's sort of guaranteed income over the next 15 years to go out and borrow a lot of money to go out and do the construction. Now, whether they need the National Grid contract is for half of the power output of the project. So someone else has to come in and do the other half to get the complete financing done. But I believe they can get started if this contract is approved. So this is a key step, but then they'll have to sell the rest of the power as well. And that will be controversial about who will take that.
And in the meantime, candidates like Charlie Baker and Tim Cahill are saying we may be making an enormous bet on wind when in fact we should be looking at other types of energy, which we seem to have just kicked to the side.
That was an interesting thing. They all, except Jill Stein, they all seem to be very enthusiastic about nuclear power. The governor was concerned about what do you do with this waste, but they were all sort of eager to sort of embrace that, which I thought was radioactive, if you will, here in New England.
Yeah, it was very interesting. You know, there also was some personal details about the candidates that sort of got laughs and seemed to attract a lot of interest. And that was when they were asked what kinds of cars they were owned. So here in order of how they answer those questions are Tim Cahill, Governor Deval Patrick, Charlie Baker, and then Jill Stein.
My wife has a caravan that's a 2000. We have a Jeep, family Jeep that is a 2002 Jeep Laredo.
We own a Toyota SUV hybrid, which our daughter uses. I have a midlife crisis car, a Mercedes convertible, which I haven't driven in 4 years, and I miss it.
I have a Chrysler 300. My wife drives a Pacifica. I have a 1966 Ford Mustang that I've owned since 1980 that I bought for $300 from a friend of mine that'll look like been eaten by a shark.
I drive a Prius hybrid.
Joe wins.
No surprise there.
So the Green Party candidate had the Prius.
She did. Yeah, she won.
Did you feel like anything about that was revealing of the candidates? Did that either personalize them or did it tell us anything about them that the debate itself didn't?
Yeah, it was. I don't know what it told me, but it was fascinating to hear the governor talk about this midlife crisis car because he doesn't seem like a midlife crisis type of guy. And I had never heard him mention anything about that before.
It was a bit of a surprising share,
yeah,
in a way.
And I think a lot of people, Charlie Baker's reference to the, I think it was a 1968 or whatever Mustang. I mean, everybody's drawing parallels to previous campaigns where people are driving around trucks or old cars or whatever. So that was interesting that they sort of wanted to talk about their cars. Whether it was revealing environmentally, I don't know.
Exactly. Bruce Mohl is editor of Commonwealth Magazine. He's in the studio with us today. Bruce, thank you very much for coming on Radio Boston.
Great to be here.